Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the role of interesting conversational partner is being played by my good friend, Chris Askew. Chris is the founder of Tilt Marketing and Branding and also the host of his own podcast. It's a sales and marketing podcast called Tag. Chris, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I've never been introduced that way as an interesting conversational partner. That feels so sterile.
Well, I know it is anything but, because we've actually done a dry run of this conversation because I pulled the classic podcaster blunder and forgot to push the record button for our last conversation. So we got a dry run. We're going to do it again. So I know it'll be good. And by the way, I do want to also mention our sponsor. We got a new sponsor for the next couple of episodes, Temperance Beer Company, located here in Evanston, Illinois. I love Temperance for many reasons, not least of which is their name. For those of you who might not know, the Temperance movement was headquartered in Evanston, Illinois. If you are in the United States, we had this thing called Prohibition back in the early 20th century, where beer was outlawed and all alcohol was outlawed. And that was, again, headquartered right here in Evanston, Illinois. So, of course, all of the breweries and distilleries pay homage by naming themselves after aspects of the Prohibition movement and going, nah, 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 boo, boo.
Dude, right?
So, anyways, I am drinking their Gatecrasher English-style ale, and it's quite tasty. So thank you, Temperance, for helping us bring this conversation to you. All right. Let's and Chris, you drinking something today? I think you are.
Yeah, dude, I'm representing our local brewery. I'm from Lisbon, Ohio, which is a super small town south of Cleveland, about an hour south of Cleveland. But this is a local brewery that makes an amazing blood orange ale.
Ooh, and nice.
The color is it's a very red beer, but the taste, it's very like fruity. It's almost like a it's almost like a cider, but it's still a beer. So it's real sweet and good, but listen to this pour out if you can catch it.
All right.
I don't know if that's coming through, but
some of it did. Now I don't know if I'm thirsty or if I have to go to the bathroom. So
It's beer, so that's kind of like a constant, right? Isn't that
I think so.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work, dude. Like, I don't know.
You have a beer and then make room for more.
Yeah, then you have a coffee if you need it. Well, never mind.
All right. Here's my question before we completely go off the rails right from the very beginning.
So, dude, I'm good at that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no worries. You are kind of new to the running an agency world. You were working for an agency. Now you're out on your own. You do a lot of marketing. Here's my question. As you've gone to running your own show and having to do marketing for yourself, what has that changed in your perception of how marketing works and in kind of the opportunities and the challenges that all of us face as we market ourselves?
All right. So yeah, you hit a good thing. Like I kind of technically run two businesses. The way I view my podcast, even though I don't really make money off of it, I do view it as a business. But it's been a lot of work, and my time has been incredibly compressed, because not only do we run the podcast and the ad agency, but I'm also a father of three boys, which, dude, that keeps
that's
me crazy.
That's a full-time job too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I'm working from home, you know, right now, because, you know, I just started up this agency, so we're real small and I work with freelancers remote. But that means like I got my little guy with me most often during the day too. So yeah, my time has been incredibly compressed. So I guess like the biggest thing that I've learned is I've had to like force myself to not be a perfectionist.
Oh, okay.
And to just put out content and ideate faster than I ever have before. Like, I feel like everything's compressed. And even if something is a fail, I would rather get a message to market than sit around and try to, you know, worry about that whole analysis of paralysis thing that you, right, that so many business owners run into, overthinking things and perfecting their message. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I think having your message, having the right message is good before you funnel a lot of dollars behind it. But I also very much believe in put stuff out there, see what's working, experiment. Dude, I just jumped onto TikTok myself and
okay.
Yeah. Like it's been, this has been fun because we've just been experimenting there because like I have always wanted to have a fun agency. The agency I worked for before was, you know, it was a very business forward. We had a lot of like accountants and banks that weren't, I don't know, they weren't fun. You know what I'm saying?
They weren't going to experiment with a brand new social media platform.
No, God, no. And God bless if they ever experimented with something funny. You know what I mean? Right, like it was all serious. And like, that's not my personality. You know what I mean? So that was one of the reasons why I ended up needing to leave was because that's, you know, I think I have a good sense of humor. My kids always tell me though, that I think I'm funnier than I am.
Well, I mean, so that's just your typical dad. I mean, that's just kind of the way it works.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you can make your kids laugh, I mean, then you actually have a legit opportunity to have a comedic career because they are right. always going to be the hardest audience.
Yes.
So what's interesting there is two things that kind of stood out to me. You know, I always talk about the challenge of bandwidth for small business owners and, you know, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs. There's only so much they can do. But a lot of times what happens and what I'm hearing is that whether it's the marketing team or, you know, the marketing agency that's going to help them or any other kind of expert resource that a small business owner is going to tap into, a lot of times those outside consultants think that they're the most important aspect of that business owner's life. And so they go, hey, here's like the 30 different options you have for marketing, right? And I this happens in a lot of different areas, but definitely in marketing where they're like, hey, here's the 9 different platforms. Here's the 14 different campaigns. Here's, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Oh yeah, and yes, you should experiment too. So maybe you should try these other 2 or 3 things. And you know, the business owner in this case or the agency head is going, dude, I got 19 emails in the last 5 minutes that you were talking to me. I've got to do client work. I've got to do all the other things. I've got to take care of our team and my personal life and my kids. Yep. And so it kind of, not even sometimes is analysis paralysis. It's just they shut down because they're like, I can't do this. I don't have the time or the bandwidth.
Well, and I think it's really important too. Like, yes, I'm experimenting with TikTok, but let me clarify. LinkedIn is my platform of choice. That's where I spend 90% of my social media time. The other 10% is spread out between like, hey, I'll post out some stuff on Instagram. You know, I'll play around with TikTok. Maybe I'll do a couple tweets. But, you know, the reality is, David, I just had to make a decision on I'm going to do this one platform. I'm going to do it really well. Now, when I talk about putting out a lot of content, I'm talking about putting out a lot of content on your main platform that you're using.
Ah, okay.
So I'm not necessarily saying, hey, I'm going to spread everything between everywhere else because, dude, brother, ain't nobody got time for that. You know what I mean? Right. And that's honestly, it's a full-time job. And honestly, for most companies, if they're going to really be honest, it's more than one person running all of those channels too.
Oh,
yeah. If you're going to do it really, really, really well. So being a small business owner and working with a lot of small businesses or startups, they just don't have the capital, not just the money, but the time capital, the investment to do that. Because, you know, what I found is the best way to get engagement on any social media platform is to actually be social.
Right.
Which that doesn't scale well. You know what I mean? Like you have to literally respond to people. You have to send personalized messages. Like, that's not a copy pasta approach that you can take and find any kind of success in.
I wish you would tell the salespeople that send me the carbon copied LinkedIn requests and messages like over and over. I mean, I guess it works with somebody, but I can't imagine.
Dude, how. I got three. I got three of them just this morning on LinkedIn, just because, like I said, that's my network. Like, I've kind of grown there a little bit. And, you know, now I'm getting to the point where I'm getting like a whole bunch of randos sending me requests rather than me being the rando sending somebody requests, which is
right.
Which has been fun. But like, oh, you're absolutely right. So many salespeople just send garbage posts that get completely ignored. And yeah, okay, you didn't put very much effort into it, but because you didn't put very much effort into it, I'm not going to put very much effort into responding or even bothering to respond.
Right. Well, and down the line, something I tell salespeople all the time is anything you're putting out there is going to make an impression. It just is very likely that it will be the wrong impression, right? The one that you don't yep. want to make.
Yep.
But I think you also said something really interesting there that I want to highlight for anybody. And this, I think, goes for definitely, you know, as we're talking small business owners, entrepreneurs, but even we just started talking about salespeople, and I talk to salespeople a lot. It's not about using all of these tools all of the time, right? Because that's when yeah. we get shut down, is when somebody goes, and this is big in the social selling space, for example, where people are like, oh, I've got to use LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and TikTok and Instagram, all of these things. And that's really not the case. It's figure out where the people that you want to engage with are and spend yep. time on that. I'm very similar to you. I spend most of my social media time, which, to be blunt, isn't that much now that I've kind of got some systems in place and also just some habits formed around it. I'm on LinkedIn most of the time. Like you, I hop on Twitter a little bit. I have an Instagram account, but I think I think my Instagram bio says, come find me on LinkedIn, because I'm never here.
yeah. I need to probably do that on mine, to be very honest. So
yeah,
because I'll get a message on Instagram and I won't see it for like 2 days. So if you're trying to reach me on Instagram, I'll see it eventually.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, one thing we didn't just mention is Facebook. Like, personally, I'm not on it a lot. I mean, if you are, that's great. I know people who love Facebook and spend a lot of time there, either for their personal lives. Professionally, if you have like a B2C business, if it makes sense to talk about your product and to engage with your customers there, great. But like, if your customers aren't there, and or if they are there, but they're not ready to talk about what you're selling. I have some clients who are insurance, you know, run insurance businesses or financial services businesses. I'm like, man, people don't want to talk about life insurance on Facebook. That's not why they're scrolling.
Exactly.
You're the dude at the party who, it's like a holiday party, and you want to say, hey, what kind of coverage do you have? It's not the right context.
Yep.
But I love what you said. It's just pick your lane and then just run in that lane.
Yes. Yeah. And it's early on, if you're like, let's just say you're a startup and you're trying to figure out what lane do I get in. At that point, I say get into a lot of, put your fingers in all the different pies, spend a little bit of time experimenting and checking out that content just to figure out where your audience is sitting. And then like after like a week or two, you should know this. It should become pretty clear early on.
Okay.
So for those of you who are startups, yeah, I do encourage getting into all of them just for checking it out, not necessarily posting, but consuming content. So, and then once you decide like, hey, yeah, this is where my audience would sit, then pick that lane.
Right. So when you think, we were talking about TikTok earlier, and to be blunt, I don't even really know much about it. I know a little, but this idea of experimenting with it. So if you were going to, you know, for yourself, or for a client that you're working with, when you talk about experimenting, what are you hoping to get from that? Because I think some people have the wrong idea of what experimenting with the new marketing tool looks like.
Yeah, so there's a couple different things. Like when we say experiment, it's always good to at least see what's out there and see where it's going to grow. Like I always say, like, you should have your finger on the pulse a little bit.
Okay.
You know, understand the zeitgeist at least somewhat so that you're not left in the dust if something really takes off. And, you know, like I saw TikTok as something that, you know, I remembered Vine from way back in the day was huge. And then Twitter was just, you know, they made some financial missteps where it was no longer viable. Because of how they were rolling out Periscope and all of that. And it pretty much
right.
killed, it killed the Vine platform.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks because now TikTok is out and it's backed by the Chinese government and everybody's jumping on this thing. And I'm over here like,
I've got a few concerns about that. I actually just saw a great video by a gentleman named Hank Green, who's a big YouTube creator. And he's like, and this is a guy who makes money and his career is based online and on social sharing. He's like, yeah, TikTok in some ways is really cool, but let's just pay attention for a moment about, you know, they can take all of your data. It's not an American company where there are some protections or a European company. The Chinese government can basically say, we want all the data you have and TikTok has to be, here you go.
Yeah. Well, and think about it like this too. Like, not only is there the data concern, but you know, Chinese government has been messing with the U.S. dollar and pinning value to it for how long now?
That's true.
And there's so many. Think about like the ethics behind, like there's been literal Apple stores opened up in China that were completely fraudulent. So, and not owned by Apple at all. But like when you see pictures on it, it looks like a legitimate Apple store.
That's crazy.
So like when you're talking about the Chinese like business, like there's a certain element of distrust that I think has been earned.
Right.
Because of illicit actions on their part. So when you say like, hey, somebody blew up to 1 million users and they have like 10,000, you know, likes for every video that they have, I've got to wonder, you know, is there, you know, gaming on the system in order to promote their platform and make the Americans think that they're becoming viral when in reality it's bots doing it.
right. There's not a lot of transparency.
Dude, and there never ever will be because who's to hold them accountable? Now you think about it this way, like, do I trust Mark Zuckerberg? No. I think Cambridge Analytica like pretty much blew that out of the water.
Right.
But do I trust the Chinese government to run my social media platforms more?
No. No.
No. No. Hard no.
Yeah.
So that said, like everybody and their mom is now on this platform. So we decided to jump in and try it out. And our video, like I made a video with my kids, like I wanted to do something really funny and relate it back to marketing. Mm-hmm. But what's really funny is the video, I posted it to LinkedIn and to Instagram, and it actually trended on LinkedIn. And I got 4,000, dude, I got 4,000 views off of it, off LinkedIn. It took me 10 minutes to put this video together. It was great.
Awesome.
Right? It's like for a video, that's my most viewed video that I've ever put out. Like I usually get good views on my static content, but this was the first time a video of mine has ever trended.
That's
so
cool.
Well, yeah, dude.
Well, and so it's also interesting, as you said, that was an experiment. I like what you just said there, where you're just trying to keep your finger on the pulse, because what it doesn't sound, and correct me if I'm wrong, what it doesn't sound like you're doing is going, hey, I'm going to experiment to see if any of this has legs and then throw a bunch of money at it in time. You're saying, hey, I want to make sure this is, that I have some awareness of this. And yeah, if something really starts kind of ringing a bell, I might put a little more attention on it, but at least I know what it is.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll know how to guide a client in it, you know, because here's the thing, like most, let's just be honest, dude, most ad agencies do not know how to reach millennials, let alone Gen Z.
Sure.
So, you know, I wanted to be a fun ad agency. And am I going to be going after Gen Z clientele? No, not necessarily. But I at least want to have a rounded, hey, we know what we're talking about and we're not idiots. You know what I mean? So like I wanted to check out this platform and actually post some stuff, consume some stuff and see what made sense so that I'm able to help customers better. And I think that that's something that's good for any business owner to do.
Interesting. So let me kind of move this from the online world to the offline world, right? Because I think it's really easy these days, whenever we talk marketing, to think of social, to think of digital channels, which are, which is obviously important, but you know, we kind of, I think, skip over a lot of other channels. Something that you kind of touched on for a moment is that you built your LinkedIn network. You just talked about all of the messages you're sending, the real engagement you're having. Networking has always been a big part of how I built my business. I write books on it. So yes, I'm super biased. I know it is for you. How do you see kind of networking kind of dovetailing with your social media? Like, is it the same? Is it different?
I mean, like, I guess to me, I don't really, it, the line is very fuzzy on that.
Nice.
Because,
okay. Which is my approach too. I just am curious.
Yeah, no, because like I'm literally like, I guess I view social media as networking. Mm. Like that's honestly like my viewpoint of it. And what's really cool is, you know, a year ago, God bless, I think a year ago, I had less than 500 connections on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And we're up to like,
you were one of those. Oh my goodness. Under 500.
Yeah. Oh God. You plebeian. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't even know why we're talking. Come on.
God. Yeah. Right. But now like, you know, like we have a good amount of connections now that I've curated and built up by being social.
Right.
So, you know, and I use the platform as a networking tool. And what's really cool is like, even for my podcast, like I've used it as a means to reach out to people that I've wanted to learn from and to network with and get to know. And that has leveraged some incredible relationships for me. That's why we're talking.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you and I have never met.
Yeah, exactly.
But we've also had a lot of conversations. And I think this came up in another episode. I forget which one, who I was talking to. It was with my friend, Pat Helmers. There, you don't have to necessarily meet in person, but you still have to have that one-on-one true conversation, whether that's by phone,
absolutely.
You know, hopping on a video chat or something. Right?
Yeah. And one thing that I try to do too, and I was encouraged by Dan Willis to do this, a great social media coach. He actually encouraged me to record personalized videos and send them to people rather than just even responding with a text response.
Yep.
And that has been, that's been amazing. First of all, because like, you know how much gets communicated via your facial tone, like your facial expression.
Yep.
And a lot gets lost in text. So, and people just love video and like, it makes that highly personal touch where, hey, somebody took just a few extra seconds to record a video and send it to me on LinkedIn in my private messages.
Yep.
Nobody does that. Nobody does that, dude. The only person I've ever gotten that from was
me.
You. Sorry. Two people, you and then one other dude sent me one and it blew me away. He was the first guy that sent it to me, Edward Zia, out of Australia. And like because you sent me one after he did. He was the first.
I wasn't the first.
Yeah, I know. Dang it, man. You slow to the punch.
Well, I've been a big fan of that because, as you said, it's a great way. There's some free platforms out there right now that make it really easy. And one thing I do caution people is remember that you are going to be on camera, and then it's not just a matter of, especially in a professional setting, you're not just calling your friend or something. So you do have to kind of be, quote unquote, on a little bit.
Yeah, and you got to make sure your diaper genie's not in the background when you do it.
Hey, you know what? People know that this is the nursery / head national or international headquarters of Rockstar.
So I had David on my podcast just to give you background, and like the whole time he was talking, like every time he moved, his little diaper genie was like right behind him, and I almost lost it at one point during the conversation just because I'm a toddler and I thought it was funny. Yes. So,
hey, you know what? But strangely enough, and I completely didn't do that on purpose, but what we're getting to with all this is that there is this value of being human, right?
Yes.
And being a person. Absolutely. It was recently I saw Mark Schaefer, who's a big marketing writer, speaker. I saw him talk for a while. And one of the big things he's kind of championing right now, man, that word's hard for me, is just this idea of really looking at marketing not as systems or processes or anything like that, but really about how do we get human to human? How do we actually engage with, you know, you talk about the younger generation. They don't want to connect with your brand. They want to connect with humans, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so there's nothing wrong with sometimes just having that diaper genie right in the background. You know, I'm like, I got a little kid that comes with the territory.
Yep. Same. Yep.
Right. You just had something interesting that I wanted to, I forgot about it. Let's switch up. Hey, so we were, I was looking at some of the music you were digging, and like me, you know, kind of the same age, you know, some of that 90s rock and stuff. But here's what I loved, and you might not know this about me. So you made a joke that you used to like the Supertones back in your ska days. So I played in a ska funk band for over a decade.
That's crazy, dude.
So I was a drummer and started back when ska was king in the mid 90s, third wave, baby.
So do you know how to skank? Are you a skanker?
The first song I ever wrote for the band was called Skank to This. So
nice.
So you know it. You know it.
That's something I'm surprised hasn't kind of hit back in a while. Like, you know how like trends kind of bounce back? It's been a minute since we've had anything that's really like horn section driven or anything in a lot of music. So
it'll pop. I think part of that's because and by the way, there's still some ska bands just keeping it going. Like here in Chicago, for sure, there's definitely bands coming through and there's still shows. I went to one recently, actually. I think that was about a year ago, but it was Mustard Plugs. It was like their 25th anniversary or something. And it was great because there was a bunch of like us oldsters, but then there was like a bunch of the kids. And I'm like, when did they start letting 12-year-olds in here? And I'm like, oh, no, they're not 12. I just feel old.
Dude, that was actually like the worst part about jumping on TikTok was like, I'm sitting here waiting through at the beginning and like, cause everybody's like, get on TikTok. You want to at least check it out. And I'm scrolling through the feed and I'm like, God bless. I feel like a pedophile. Everybody's 12.
You know what I mean? Like, all right. Hopefully not. But yes, you feel like the old guy in the bar.
Totally. Right? Yeah. Yes. Very much. I feel like the old guy in the bar is surrounded by 20 somethings. Like, dude, you do not fit in. But eventually, like, just side note, like, I'm not a pedophile. Just clearing that up.
Yes, we are pretty into the interweb.
Great big disclaimer. This got awkward fast. I'm good at that.
Well, going back to awkward, there's an old Chris Rock comedy special. And it's still, I first heard this 20 years ago, and it still rings in my ears sometimes. When he talks about the old guy in the club. And he goes, he's not that old. He's just too old to be in the club.
Yes. Well, what's funny is like I had to like search out like certain hashtags and whatnot that were relevant to marketing, advertising, sales, and then you start finding your crew. So for those of you who have tried TikTok and decided, hey, it's just a bunch of kids doing dumb shit, pardon my French, it's not. You can find like adults on there. You know, you just got to like give it some time for the algorithm to let you know that
you got to find. So. You got to find all the parents. You know, right? That are
right. You got to find all the dads trying to be cool and rocking out to their old ska bands.
Right. So. And to go back to my point, I think that the electronic music craze over the last 15 years definitely kind of stymied the development of the next wave of ska. But here's what I do think. I think everything does go in waves, and we're starting to see some of the kids getting back to really liking bands that aren't electronics driven, right? I mean, the 2000s, early 20 teens, you saw a lot of kind of computer-based EDM, all that kind of stuff. And now you see people kind of going back to acoustic and horns are going to come back because you have a good driving horn section and there ain't nothing like it.
One of my first concerts was a ska concert. It was a band called Five Iron Frenzy. And I was in Aberdeen, South Dakota at that concert, man. So that was
ska Mecca.
Ska Mecca. There was 12 of us rocking out. It was amazing.
Hey, that's a big ska show. I still remember when I was still in the band. So this is actually early on, so maybe like late 90s. If you remember the Onion newspaper, the comedy newspaper.
Oh, yeah. I still follow that online.
Nice. They had this is back old school before they ever had a website. So you actually had to go get the newspaper at the record store. They had this fake headline.
The record store and a news. How old are you?
Okay. So for all of you under the CDs.
I'm like, who? I didn't even know the Onion had an actual physical paper.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they started in Wisconsin. I grew up with them in high school and stuff. Dang, but they had a fake headline, which was ska band at local show outnumbers audience.
Oh.
And somebody sent it to me, and all I could do is go, yeah, that's about right.
That's about right.
That's why, that's why you'd have these ska shows, especially when it first started. So this is like 95. This is before the Boston's had their one hit. The summer of 98 was so exciting for us. But there'd be like four bands. You got to usually have about 6 to 8 people in the show, in each band. And so that was the trick. If you had four of them, so there's, let's say, you know, 6 people, 6 times 4 is 24. That means that 6 of them are on stage, and then you have 18 people there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then if there's a couple of random friends, I mean, that's a huge show.
I know Supertones had like 18 people in the band because they had like a big horn section. So it was like, it was quite the crew. So, you know, when they were traveling through small towns in South Dakota, outnumbering your audience is probably easy. You know what I'm saying?
Very true. So, very true. Yeah. But that was one of those stops where they're like, okay, we're driving our van from the West Coast to the Midwest. All right, where can we stop and have a show where maybe somebody will let us sleep on their floor? Because you know that, especially with those big bands, like they did not have enough money to buy hotel rooms for everybody. So basically you were looking, there might have been a couple times where some traveling bands, out of city bands, crashed on our floor. We're like, that's cool, guys. Yeah, we opened for you, and then you come and crash on our floor, no problem.
So what was the first concert you played then, man?
The first concert I played some bands like earlier, but so our band, it was called the Jesters. I think some of the guys are still around doing it. Good for them. Our first show ever, I was the president of our hall in our dorm. And so we had to like have snacks, like a snack night. So I was like, and we had just, me and one of my friends that started this band, so we're like, oh, we're going to just play in the dorm basement. So it was in the Foster Walker Complex basement. It was a Thursday night, and we had ribs from a local rib place, and that's why everybody came, but who cares? And then they listened to us, and then...
Dude, whatever it takes to get them there, man.
Yeah,
who cares,
and then we
kept
going. A couple albums, had, you know, a lot of fun, played everywhere from garages in downstate Illinois up to the House of Blues, and it kind of everywhere in between, so...
So, like, the only thing I have stuck in my mind is that scene from Kevin from The Office where he plays in the wedding band. Like, this is on repeat right now, dude. So you got to get some like video or something and post some throwback for me, because I need this mental picture just broken, brother.
All right, we'll find it. We'll take care of you.
Thank you.
And I think that's probably a good cue that we should wrap this up before we go completely off the rails.
I'm sorry, man.
All right. Well, we're going to talk again. It's all good.
Right.
Hey, one thing that I do ask all of my guests at the end of our conversation: what's one piece of advice that you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
You know, I would say just don't worry about being self-conscious about stuff. You know, that's something that, like, I'm a thick guy. You know, like, I went from being real heavy set to dropping a whole bunch of weight to, unfortunately, like, I worked at a job that I hated for a couple of years, and then I found another job that I hated after that for a couple of years. And I puffed up again. So, but like, I, you know, like, you got to get over it. Like, I just did, I got to interview Joe Pulizzi in person, and it was all live stream video. I live streamed at a digital marketing conference. And like I said, I'm a thick dude, but like, dude, you just got to break through that. So if you're struggling with not putting out content because you're worried that you might sound weird, you might be ugly, you might be overweight, you know, like, your content might be good, I'm just going to tell you right now, get over it and just do it. Dive in commit. Yeah. Because like, once you break past that, it's all just a mental click that you have to like just shut off in your brain. Once you break past that, you're going to see that people buy in, you know what I mean? And like, I'm living proof to that. You know what I mean? Like, we've grown tremendously. The podcast has grown tremendously. Like, my social presence has grown tremendously because like, I put myself out there and I try to be authentic, you know what I mean? But you know, like, I could have let my own insecurities hold me back, and they were for a long time. I would say like, yeah. So that would be the best advice that I would give. Like, if you really want to start kicking butt, like, get all that behind you and just dive in and go for it.
The world needs to hear what you have to say is what I tell people all the time. So yep. I love that. Good. And also, of course, when we talk about things that we have to say, we do have to thank our sponsors for the show. Temperance Beer Company right here in Evanston, Illinois. I have been and am now completely finished with their Gatecrasher English Style Ale, a great IPA. And again, I'm not a big IPA fan. So if I can drink a beer or that's an IPA and say, hey, I'm kind of enjoying this, that is high praise. But you can look for them all over the Chicagoland area. And I think their distribution has even started to grow beyond that as well. So thanks everybody over at Temperance. And thank you for listening to this episode of Beer Beats and Business. We'll be back at you with some more interesting conversations with interesting people. And until then, have a fantastic day. Bye.